Welcome to the Hacking Happy podcast, a podcast designed to arm you with the tools and experiments that enable you to define happiness on your terms and inject more of it into each day. I'm your host, Penny Lacasso. I'm the world's first happiness hacker, and I have a bold mission. A mission to teach 10 million humans how to realize happiness on their terms by 2025. So, if you're ready to ignite your self-belief and inject more of what makes you feel good into each day, let's get started. Hello, beautiful happiness hackers, and welcome to another episode of the Hacking Happy podcast. We are this week at episode 60, which I have to stop and take a breath because, I don't know, when I started this journey, I never anticipated hitting that number. We're almost at 20,000 downloads, which is beautiful. It's a beautiful way to connect with people. I love that I get to jump in your ears every week and share with you stories and hacks and just beautiful ways for you to live the life that you long for. And today is no different. And I'm joining you this week from the beautiful Burleigh Heads. You may or may not know. One of the beautiful things that I have learned through my journey of transformation is that the more you step into the uncertainty, the more experience, the better you get at actually not allowing barriers to stop you from living the life you want. Now, Burleigh Heads is probably a great example of that as I sit here in this beautiful co-working space, because one of my dreams is to live by the water. And at the moment, because of the fact that I share my son with my ex-husband and he's at school in Melbourne, I'm kind of tied to Melbourne. And that's the reality of the situation. However, I found a way to still get that feeling of living by the beach. And I'm fortunate that my father and my brother escaped Melbourne amidst lockdowns and bought a property in Burleigh Heads. And so I now basically come up here every 5 weeks. I spend a whole week up here and I live the life that I want to live by the coast. So it's just an example of how we start to navigate what we perceive as barriers to living the life we want in a way that actually removes the obstacles. We get creative in our own journey to transformation. So that's what we're going to play with this week. We are going to talk about stories of transformation. So what comes to your mind when you think of the word transformation? For me, it's a visual of a little caterpillar one day deciding it's time. So she spins her little cocoon to encase herself. And soon after, she reappears as a beautiful butterfly, transformed into the next iteration of who she wants to be. It's intentional and it's absolutely beautiful. Now, whilst I love this visual, I know all too well, my friends, the truth of transformation. I have lived and breathed it now for 8 years, and I continue to constantly self-disrupt in order to transform and become the person that I want to be and live the life that I want to live. And the reality is, whilst I love the idea of just one day appearing as a beautiful butterfly, the reality is transformation is freaking messy. It is uncertain. It's extremely uncomfortable. It requires failure. It requires experimentation. It requires persistence. And it requires resilience, which sadly is why so many of us spend our lives longing for change, but never actually taking the leap and start living what we want that change to look like for ourselves. Palliative care nurse Bronnie Ware spent her days with the dying and decided to start asking her patients on their deathbeds what their greatest regrets were in life. The number one regret of the dying is, I wished I'd lived a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. Let me read that again. The number one regret of the dying is, I wished I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. Now, I share this with you because I ask you, do you think these people lent into transformation? Do you think these people lived their lives wholeheartedly and realized their dreams? The answer is no. And it's why I've created this week's podcast. This week's podcast is for anyone who finds themselves stuck in the void between intention and action, unable to find the right path to progress their dreams. So many people reach out to me asking, where did you start? How did you know it would work out? What one action had the greatest impact? Now, I know because I have had these conversations thousands of times since I changed my life. And I know what these people are seeking. They are seeking often help. They want to know the how of making change. And often, sadly, we want the quick fix, right? They want to know how to make change so they can find the confidence and the courage to step into this life that they long for. But sadly, there is no quick fix. And that's why this week, I want to bring with you some real and raw stories, stories of transformation from everyday people, people like you and I, who have stepped into the unknown, who have embraced the failure and realized happiness they never thought possible as a result. I want to share with you their diverse stories in the hope that it might inspire you to take just one action that moves you from this frustrated space that you find yourself in, this overwhelm, to fulfilled, so that you can show up wholeheartedly in your life as who you really are. So grab a pen and paper, strap yourself in. There is wisdom in their words and absolute inspiration in their actions. We all believe you've got what it takes, my friend. We just thought we'd help you see it, so you can start to be it. Enjoy.
Hello, amazing Kate, and welcome to the Hacking Happy podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Penny. I'm very excited to be here.
We're here to share stories of transformation, and you are one of the first to share your story, which I thought was a good one when we initially connected. So I thought, why not share it with the community? Because the old saying goes, if you can't see it, you can't be it. So we want to help people see what's possible, which is why you're here.
Thank you. That's a huge compliment. And yes, I'm hoping I can help someone on their journey.
Beautiful. To start us off, give us a bit of a rundown on who you are as a human being.
I am more recently a mum. I am a small business owner. I am a podiatrist at the end of the day. I guess that's kind of my more formal title, but I wear a lot of hats in life.
So paint a picture for us of what your life looked like before you kind of transformed into the evolution that you are in now, which is a number of businesses that are scaling up, basically.
So I bought a two-day-a-week business about a year and a half, I think, out of university after I finished my podiatry degree. And it was very early in my career. And I didn't think it would be that early, but it seemed silly not to grab it with both hands. So it was in the location that I'd always kind of dreamed about having it in the right suburb for me. And yeah, I was taking over something that was running 2 days a week. So it wasn't a complete startup. And yeah, I just thought the opportunity was there. It would be silly to say no. And in, you know, whether it be 6 months, 12 months down the track, be kicking myself for not, yeah, seizing the moment.
So when you were kind of going through this process of trying to work out whether to jump in and make this step change, what sort of feelings did you have? What was the voice in your head saying?
A lot of imposter syndrome, I think, being so young and so fresh out of my degree. I was hyper aware of the fact that I had a lot to learn as a podiatrist, let alone as a small business owner. So there was a lot of that. And I think a lot of fear about judgment from other people. You know, there was people a lot older than me that weren't doing it in our industry. So I kind of felt, yeah, fear and that imposter syndrome about whether it was I could do it.
And so talk to us about how you overcame imposter syndrome and fear of what others would think.
Imposter syndrome is still there, definitely still something that pops up at times. And I think that's, yeah, it can very much depend on my own headspace and, you know, mental well-being. But I think I realized that anything that was worth doing was potentially going to be hard, and that just because other people weren't doing it was no reason for me not to. And I think I would prefer to have failed something having tried than not tried at all.
Has your relationship, or how has your relationship with imposter syndrome changed? Even so, you I love what you said. You said it still presents, it doesn't go away. And I can completely connect to that after 8 years in this space of, you know, being a business owner. But how do you navigate that differently now from way back when it first started out?
I think a lot of positive self-talk and reflecting on the wins along the way, because that makes a huge difference in, you know, reassuring yourself that you are in the right place and you can do what you want to be doing. So that's probably the best way that I deal with imposter syndrome now. And I have a fabulous team around me who, you know, we all pump each other's tires up. And so it's, yeah, it's very easy to let go of those moments of anxiety and imposter syndrome that can creep up on you when you've got, I guess, the right cheer squad around you as well.
And do you have a process that you use to basically just take a breath and notice and celebrate the progress that you've made, given you've just spoken about that? Because I think what happens, and we see it so often, is we're so good at focusing on what we haven't done that actually significantly diminishes the impact of all of the progress that we've made, and equally the impact how we feel about ourselves and our motivation to keep going. So what's your process for that?
So I'm a big believer in writing goals down and also celebrating goals when you reach them. It's something we do with the team as well. Every week that I meet with the team and every fortnight when I meet with my business mentor, the first thing we go through with each other is what's your biggest win in the last however long it's been since we talked. And I think that's just a real moment to, yeah, give that nod to even the small wins, because we are always chasing the next big thing. And I think in small business, you kind of get caught up in the momentum of everything that you can sometimes forget to stop and celebrate the wins. And it can be really disheartening because you're then just striving for the next thing and not celebrating. So I think making conscious space to actually celebrate the wins small and big, and having things written down so that you can, I like ticking things off a list. So for me, having it written down is a real moment of like, yes, I've achieved that. That's done. That's great. Well done. So yeah, that's probably my process in that sense.
When you were stepping into this change to, you know, level up and step into sort of Kate 2.0 in the business context, talk to us a little bit about what the sort of the first action was that you took that kind of had an impact.
So the first 5 years for me of having a small business was essentially just a glorified job. It was me doing every aspect. So I was the podiatrist, I was admin, I was the cleaner, I was the debt collector, I was every facet of the business. So it was very much just a glorified job with a bit more stress. And so I made a move to join a small business mentorship, essentially. I'd tried a few that weren't really my vibe, but I came across a really small at the time group that was run by podiatrists, which was a huge tick for me because our industry is very unique, I think. So it kind of ticked a lot of boxes. So for me, making that shift to actually spend time on the business, not in the business, and have someone keeping me accountable changed everything.
So talk to us a little bit then around what value this coach brought to you. Like, what's been the most powerful part of having a mentor slash coach?
So I think it sounds really funny, but for me, I guess him explaining to me that I needed to get out of the way a little bit of the business, and also to give me the tick of approval to do things that I think in small business you sit and mull over for way too long. It's that person that kind of says, yes, you can do that, like, why not? And knowing that they've come from a similar industry or same industry and they've either been through it or they know someone that's been through it gives you that reassurance that you too can do it. There's no reason for you to be questioning that decision.
So permission.
Yes, which sounds so bizarre, but that's something that we need. But it's, yeah, it is the permission and the approval to go, yes, that's a great idea, do it.
And talk to us a little bit about having a, you know, a mentor slash coach to help you on this journey. Has there, like, the role of accountability, like showing up to this person on a regular basis, What impact has that had on your progress, on how you, you know, step into all of this?
So I think having that person to keep me accountable has made me create space to be able to do the things that, had I not had an accountability coach or a mentor to keep me accountable, would have always fallen to the bottom of the list. And that's when you don't tend to progress very quickly, because it doesn't become a priority. But when you know you've got someone who you've got to pick up the phone to, and they're going to say, did you action A, B, and C from last week? It's kind of like, well, I'm paying you, I guess, as well for this role. I'm not going to take your advice and action those things. Then what on earth am I doing? Yeah, it was a huge positive progression for me to have them push me, I guess, as well, that little bit more.
So many women that I speak to that are business owners and have small children like yourself talk to me about, or come to me because they're completely burnt out. And when you and I spoke, you said to me, I kind of have this beautiful chaotic balance that works for you. So I always liken the analogy of, you know, I feel that so many of us are trying to fill a full pond. It's like we've all only got 24 hours in the day, right? We're all only one human. For some reason, we think that if we become more productive, we can pour more into this full pond. And the reality is it all just flows out the top and it leaves us feeling burnt out and overwhelmed. So how do you manage not making sure that that pond is, one, overflowing, and two, not filled with the wrong things, the things that actually don't light you up and make you feel good?
Oh, that's a really good question. And I don't know if I have the perfect answer or an answer at all, but I think having a bit of a village is definitely one aspect, and being able to write things down so that you can, I guess, action priority one tasks so that things can get done. I think if you, yeah, if you're in the trenches too much, then you will not manage to actually progress on any larger priority tasks. So for me, I think being able to put some time aside in the evenings once my husband's home and he can kind of take over the parenting role, and I can sit in my office and action a few big things that have been sitting in the back of my mind for the day. I also find writing things down as they pop up is so important, because if you don't, it can just slip. And then I find I'm in that really horrible kind of spiral where you can't find the thought that you were thinking of, and it's just a really frustrating place to be. So trying to prioritize things, write things down, and ask for help when you need it as well, because I know there's certain times in life where I need to focus more on the business. We're kind of going into that transition phase for me at the moment, so I need to be able to create space to be able to focus on the business, but I equally don't want to be missing out on milestones and beautiful moments with my daughter, because at the end of the day, I had children to, you know, watch them grow and spend time with them. So it's just about making the right hours of the day work for you. And yeah, I think that's kind of how I work in my organized chaos at this point in time.
You mentioned the number one priority. How do you make sure that you focus on what is the priority and don't let all of the noise creep in?
That's something that I found really hard. And I think a lot of people, especially in the early stages of small business, find really hard, because the big priority tasks are often not the ones that bring dollars in straight away. So it can be really hard to take yourself out of. So in my position, treating patients, you know, one after the other, and actually taking time out to actually work on the business, which long game brings a much higher return of value, but because you don't see it immediately, that kind of instant gratification isn't there. So yeah, I think being able to take yourself away from, always call it the trenches, it sounds really drastic, doesn't it? But being in the trenches to be able to see the bigger picture so that you can make clearer decisions on what those priorities are, kind of those big priority tasks are, and also being better at delegating. Like when I first had employees or subcontractors was the first round that I tried, which didn't really work out for me. I didn't like delegating, or I wasn't good at delegating, because I couldn't get the systems and the processes out of my head, which was something that changed drastically when that version 2.0 after some mentoring came in, because I was able to remove myself from the space, get the systems and processes down, and stop being a bottleneck within the business, because everyone had to come to me to ask me questions because it was all in my head. Whereas once I got it down and we could systemize things, I wasn't in the way anymore. And it just made a huge amount of space for me to then be able to, one, see the benefits of being able to work on those priority tasks that don't return value immediately, but also give me more time to be able to continue to work on those priority one tasks that, yeah, long ball game gives you a much higher return on time investment, I guess.
And I think that's probably a really good challenge for people listening, because, again, it's something I see all the time when people come to me for coaching, is that it's not the long-term game that they're playing. You know, like, they've got these beautiful goals and these dreams, but unfortunately they, like you said, they get pushed down to the bottom of the priority list because what days are spent doing is firefighting. Yes. It's all the short-term reactive stuff. So I think it's a beautiful challenge to put yourself, you know, are you playing the long game or are you firefighting, and what's the opportunity to shift that? Last question for you. Tell us what advice you would have for someone who's seeking to undertake any form of transformation based on your experience and your learning.
I think every decision that I have lost sleep over has been a great decision business-wise for me to take. There's always risk involved, and obviously you need to calculate that risk, but grab it with both hands, because at the end of the day, life is very short. And I think things pop up usually at the right time, but you just need to be in the right space to actually grab it with both hands and say, yes, I will do that. And if you have the, you know, positive mindset, then there's nothing bad can come from those decisions. From my experience, it's only going to be a positive outcome. So if something comes up that seems like a, yes, that's really exciting, but it makes me really anxious, that's really good. If it doesn't make you anxious, it's probably not a big enough dream or a big enough, you know, goal or whatever it may be. So yeah, if it gives you butterflies and you're a little bit nervous about it, then it's likely a very good decision.
I think such a beautiful note to end on, because so much of what I hear is, I want the change. I'm ready to step into it. Well, I want to step into it, but I'm worried it won't work out. And what if I fail? And I think what's so interesting is that if you don't try, you'll never know, right? And so every expert, right, was once a beginner, and we get sold constantly these experts where people have this idea that they've just magically arrived at this space, but they haven't seen the 10 years of failing, of experimenting, of things not being right that sit behind it. So I think what you're saying, you know, it makes absolute sense. And I suppose just to close this out, what role has experimentation played in your journey?
It's been huge. And I think it's, yeah, exactly what you said. I find it really frustrating when people say you're so lucky. Like I hear that a lot. You're so lucky. It's not luck. You create your own luck. And I find it incredibly frustrating. I've had businesses that I've opened and closed just because I have currently, you know, small business that's successful and doing well. There's been a lot of grunt work in the background that hasn't gone to plan and hasn't worked out. So I think, yeah, in the world of social media, we see all the glitz and glamour and the happy stories, but there is always something behind that. Nothing's really an overnight success. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears go into everything. So I think, yeah, you need to just be able to take a leap of faith, but also know that there's going to be some hard work behind the scenes that need to happen for you to be able to be that success.
Thank you so much, beautiful woman. That was amazing.
Thanks, Penny.
Hey there, thought I'd just press pause for a moment and ask you a question. I wonder if, like I used to, you use work as a form of escapism to avoid feelings that bubble under the surface and whisper to you constantly, this is not the life I want to live. But what if it doesn't have to be this way? What if I told you you could bounce out of bed feeling confident in your path because you know what action to take to feel aligned and in motion with the life you long for? If you'd like to do this year differently, shift gears into freedom mode, let your priorities drive your time, not the other way around, feel courageous and confident in uncertainty and holistically supported on the journey, Flourish Forward Coaching might be right for you. Go to flourishforwardcoaching.com to book a discovery call today.
Hello, my dear friend, Amy. Welcome to the Hacking Happy podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. I've wanted to do this for a while and I was just waiting for the right moment. So sharing stories of transformation felt like exactly the right fit for you in terms of where to put you. So for our listeners today, tell us first and foremost who you are as a human being.
So my name's Amy Tovnik, and I describe myself as someone who is in transition, and I fully accept all parts of that, the good and the bad and the ugly. And I am on a mission to figure out what my true life's purpose is.
So paint a picture for us of what your life looked like, let's say 2020, when COVID kicked off. Your old world.
I feel like I just had a physical response to that question.
Wow, I love that.
Well, it definitely was the old me. So it was very chaotic. I would probably have described my day to day as very busy and very full. I was working lots of hours, so giving a lot of myself to my previous role, which I loved doing. I loved my role. And I was probably burning the candle at both ends. You know, if you want to use an analogy, I was mum. I am still mum, but was mum at that time to two little children, and one of who has never had a birthday party, and the other one was obviously affected by homeschooling. So, you know, really doing the juggle of maintaining a relatively comfortable life for the kids throughout, you know, what we've come to know as COVID. So yeah, really difficult time for the juggle and trying to make sure that I could be a great work person in terms of my contribution and the difference I was making in my role to try and be, you know, a really great mum and wife, and obviously keep the home fires burning as well. So it was quite a busy time for me when COVID arrived.
Why do you think you had a visceral response to that question? And I'm interested in where you felt it in your body.
I felt it in my chest, actually, and I feel like it took me back to the way I felt when that time was, you know, really, really thick and real, I think, and I've moved a lot since then, so I think it was the reflection of how I felt back then.
And can you describe the feelings, like in terms of the everyday?
Yeah, so I was stressed. Like, there's no two ways about it. Like, I was absolutely stressed. I was burning out. And, you know, I think when you're in an organisation and something like COVID strikes, it requires a lot of you to pivot and to, you know, I mean, I've spent 17 years in human resources. So human resources, I think, throughout COVID became really important in terms of how a business could run and function and how we could remain viable and how we can support people through that time. So there was a lot of draw emotionally on me for work, but also then back into the home in terms of trying to keep, you know, I guess minimize the impacts of what was going on in the world on the children and the family unit. So I kind of describe it when I talk about it to people that we're all in our own boats in a very big sea. So everybody's boat was relative to them and relatively impactful for what it was for them. And we're all just trying to, you know, row and keep the water out of the boats, I think. And really, I think that's how it felt for me going through that time.
Talk to us about when you woke up in the morning. How would you feel back then?
Tired. Yeah, I don't think it really mattered how much sleep you kind of have. When you're operating like that, it's very hard to keep pouring the energy out. So yeah, I sort of felt tired. I did do prioritize my well-being. Like, you know, I used to go to the gym and I was very committed to all of those things as well. But I kind of felt gassed out, if that's even a phrase, of just, yeah, constantly sort of giving and being tired in the mornings. Probably also feeling a little bit unsure about, you know, what the day was going to bring and what I would need to kind of be ready for or be able to support.
What was the moment where you sort of got to and decided something's got to change?
That's a really interesting question, actually, because my reflection now is I started to change before that. So I realized, I think I started asking my questions around, you know, what do I really kind of want to do before I got to that sort of final point. And the interesting thing is that once I came to the point where things did change, I'd already started to move myself closer to that even being possible. So, and I did that through, actually, one of the first things I think I did was do one of your fear courses, Penny. around facing your fears. So that was actually kind of an early part of my journey into kind of figuring out how to make intentional change for myself. So it was just by a series of events that my role came to an end in terms of a restructure in the middle of COVID, actually. And then I found myself in a position where I didn't have a role and I had the space to do some deep thinking and work around what I wanted to do next.
So you get to this point where you're starting to make changes and you've noticed you've already made the decision, so you're actually starting to step into the change. Talk to us a little bit about what the voice in your head was saying when you were stepping into this uncertain place. Because like you said, right, you'd worked in corporate for 16 years, 17 years, and you were sort of the key breadwinner for the family, a family of four. So talk to us about the voice in your head and what was saying to you.
Yeah, so it's interesting, actually. I talk about this in terms of my currency of value and the way that I used to define my currency of value was about being the main income earner, and I shouldered that responsibility quite seriously in terms of, you know, I have to have a job and I have to work and provide for my family. And that was the construct that I made for myself and that I lived into. And so I think, you know, there was a big drive for me coming out of one role to go into another one and to find a new way to do that. But I was just very blessed in terms of the fact I had space and time to reflect and think about what it was I really wanted to do, because I was afraid of not being able to do that. And, you know, it's all the what ifs and what if I don't have a job? What if I don't earn money? What if I can't do this or I can't do that? We all have those kind of responsibilities. So, yeah, I really had to unlearn and relearn what my currency of value was. And I think I found myself really thinking about the fact I wanted to be something different, in particular to my family and myself, and I didn't want to keep sort of working the way that I had been working for such a long time.
If you look back, what would you say would be the most impactful action you've taken in, say, the last, what's it been, like, it's been a bit over a year now?
I think that our minds are really, like, incredibly powerful in terms of working to keep us safe and comfortable, which also means staying exactly where we are.
Mm.
And so what I think I've figured out is that what's in the way is the way. So, like, I mean, that's quite a big statement, but I think, you know, changing your life doesn't happen in a comfort zone. So you really do need to put yourself out there. And it's scary, the thought of, you know, doing something you've never done before, because it opens you up to failure or vulnerability. And it's, you know, basically, I think the most powerful thing I did was push into my fear, really around using that for the power of, I guess, the power to change and to make really intentional changes. And I think for people see it as like a big, massive thing that, you know, I could have to go and quit my whole job and then sell my house and move to Dalesford because I want to live in the country, for example. But actually, we could do lots of smaller things and break it down to sort of make it a bit more palatable and easier to build courage as you go through each step of that. So I think the most impactful thing is actually leaning into that and finding a way to break it down into smaller bite-sized pieces and just try things one at a time or undertake smaller experiments so that you are able to that change. I think, you know, that's probably the internal thing that I did. The other most impactful thing for me was surrounding myself with lots of interesting, like-minded growth people that I admired and that I wanted to learn from and utilized, you know, that those people and that network really, yeah, to the fullest potential that I could whilst I was going through that period of reflection and figuring out what was next.
So you've touched on it, which was a beautiful segue into my next question. Talk to us about the role experimentation played in your transformation.
Without it, I wouldn't be where I am. I can tell you that now. I think the experimentation helped me to build courage.
Yeah.
Along the way. And I think so it's, you know, push the boat out a little bit and then sort of bring it back and push the boat out a little bit and bring it back. And that method of trying something, believing in myself to try something and then giving it a go and then building courage through that is absolutely critical to making intentional change. So I talk about it now with everybody. It's like, well, an experiment is an amazing thing because it's not about whether it fails or not. Mm-hmm. It's actually about, you know, giving something a go and seeing what you learn from it. And, you know, the possibilities of that are endless in terms of when you're thinking about reinventing yourself or you're thinking about wanting to try something new. Or, you know, we all do it in terms of if you think about an in-house role, we call it a pilot, or we do all these other things. So I think we're absolutely capable of doing it. But when we are trying to make wholesale change, it is a bit scary because we're not really sure what we're doing. And to be honest, I still don't really know what I'm doing. And I think I've talked to you about it before, this whole concept of the illuminated staircase and just having the trust that I don't know all the stairs are there. In fact, I'm not sure what direction they're even going in, but I know that there's two stairs in front of me that I can see, and I've built the trust up and the courage in myself to actually continue to take those two steps as they light up. And I can confidently say to you that I've never actually felt happier in my life than what I feel now and how I feel about my past 12 months of experimentation and pushing into new spaces.
So it's almost like you've preceded Ames. You know exactly what I'm going to say next. Tell us what your life looks like now relative to that sort of stressed, exhausted woman that existed in 2020.
Yeah, it's so different. Like, I'm different and I know, feel different. I think I look different. I work differently. And I think, you know, it's interesting because I was doing a bit of a reflection a couple of weeks ago, and I think the greatest gift that I have given myself through this process is choice. And it's really, you know, I think I was saying yesterday that this whole idea of balance is, it's not even attainable. I think, you know, this whole construct in workplaces where we talk about work-life balance, it's got to go. Like, it's old and it's not even attainable for anybody, whether we're talking about women or men. And I think the concept should be replaced with choice, you know, because I can choose now where I invest my time. I choose now what kind of work I do, and I choose who I work with, and I choose to put me first and work around that. So I think my life looks really different now because I make the choices about where I want to spend my time. And that's not necessarily about balance. It's actually about what my priorities are on any given day. So that my life now, my currency of value is different. I heard someone speak once about being, you know, like a powerhouse kind of burning, wood burning sort of massive furnace versus being a wind farm. And I'm yes, I'm definitely a wind farm now, and I generate energy, and I'm working with amazing people. So my life looks really different now to what it did before I lent into, I guess, making change.
It's interesting what you say about choice, because I think I completely agree with the balance piece in terms of balance being unattainable, because I see it every day with clients, with coaching clients, where they're even more burnt out in the strive for balance because they just feel like they can't get there. And I love what you said about choice, but I think what's interesting about that, and I think you could potentially build on for us, is it's not that you didn't have the choice before, and it's not that you weren't making choices before. I would ask, were those choices conscious and intentional?
Mm. Yeah. No, I think it's a really good point, because I thought I was making choices, in fact. Mm. And I think a lot of that is tied to, you know, this deep kind of concept of what our own construct of self is, right? So I was running around making all the choices then, and I have done, and doing them all with the best intention for me and my family and all of those things. But I think what shifted now is, yeah, the fact that I want to be more connected to purpose and what that is versus actually just trying to, I guess, I don't want this to sound incorrect, but I was a cog in the machine before, and now I am my own machine.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's really different. It's a really different feeling. And so the choices I make now are because I've constructed my own sort of machine and my own sort of life, and I want to put the pieces in there versus actually being, I guess, a part of somebody else's machine.
Have you had a coach that's helped you on the journey?
Yes, I have had a coach. I've had a few different people on this journey help me.
Can you just talk to us through the value that having those sort of people around you, coaching you, what impact and values that delivered?
Well, you know, I am I'm studying now, and I've taken up studies in psychology, which has always been something I've wanted to do. And I now have choice and space to do that in alongside the work that I do. And if you're able to see something, you're able to be it, right? So I think for me, it is really, you know, the coach, the roles that these coaches, and some of them haven't been termed as, you know, I wouldn't say all of them are, you know, official coaching relationships, but I think surrounding yourself with people that help you on your journey is really critical, because you know, especially when you're making change like this, being able to be supported through that. So whether you seeing people do amazing things and you want to do that so that you know it's possible, whether it's around setting clear goals or having somebody who can give you really great feedback and help you to hold yourself accountable to the goals that you're setting, I think it's really integral to, you know, being able to make meaningful change for yourself. Yeah, I think it's definitely been, and I'm lucky enough, I'm very lucky that I have some really great friends that do that for me. But certainly coaches are critical to, I think, you know, making that change. And I think too, the other thing is coaches, lots of coaches give you different things. So I think for me, I'm going through a process now of figuring out what do I need from a coach. And, you know, I think we were having a conversation only yesterday where I was talking to you about Mario Brothers level one. Kind of feel like I've conquered the dragon at the end of level one, Mario Brothers, and now I need to go to level two. And so what does Amy 2.0 look like? And for me, I want to be guided and supported on that journey by somebody who's got some great things to bring to the table for me. So identifying what it is that I need and the right person to give that to me for the next stage of Amy is really critical for me.
The last question I've got for you, Ames, is what advice would you give to someone who is in the stage that you were in, you know, back in 2020, someone who wants to make a change but's kind of sitting on the fence?
I would say it's okay.
Mm.
It's okay to feel like you want something different and not know where to go or what to do, because I feel like I'm having this conversation with a lot of people, like friends and clients, that, you know, for whatever reason have come through COVID. And I actually term this as a gift of COVID. I think, you know, people are reevaluating and redefining or realigning what they want out of life. And I would, yeah, the first thing I would say is it's okay to have those feelings. And I actually think it's happening to a lot of people more than you realize. And then the next thing I would say is do it. Like start taking, you know, small steps. So whether they are micro experiments or leaning into these ideas that you have around what you might want to do or who you might want to be next, I would definitely start taking steps towards, you know, setting yourself up for what's to come. Because I think, you know, what if I reflect back on, and maybe I'm not making very much sense, but if I reflect back on where I am today to where I was, the reason I am where I am today is because of everything that I did, you know, all of those intentional steps that I took, all of the decisions I made to, you know, meet with people or to talk to people or to learn from people or to try something new. All of those things led me to where I am today, and I wouldn't be where I am if I hadn't had the courage to do those things. So definitely it's okay. It's completely fine that you feel like this. And then you've got to back yourself and just take some courage and take a step forward and not rush into things. I think that would be the other thing, because I was in the sort of 3 months afterwards finishing up my last role. I had, as I said, the space and time to sort of think about what I wanted to do next. I was in the mix for some pretty significant roles, you know, GM roles, in the interview process and going through all of that. And I actually pulled out of all of those roles because I knew I really wanted something different. So don't rush into sort of, you know, staying in the same environment that you're in when these opportunities present themselves. I think it's a really, you know, everything happens for a reason. It's a gift. So actually take that and take the time that you need to figure out what it is that you want to do next and get the right people around you to help you on that journey.
I love two things that you said. One was the staircase and the stairs and the illumination, because I seriously believe from everything that I've done and from what I've watched others do in this space, it's the action that actually breeds the clarity. And I think people are completely misled when they think that they need to have the answers before they take action. All you need to know is that you don't want what you've got. Yeah, and just the micro steps, like that was the other thing you said, which I thought was beautiful, is that people look at the massive scale of the change they want to make, which can be completely overwhelming. So they're looking at the five-year picture, you know, like I want to change, and they forget how long it's taken them to become the person that they've become. You know, like you, it took me 16, 17 years of my career to get to an executive level. And yet we start over and think that it's got to happen overnight. It's not realistic. And so these micro steps, and like what I saw you do, and it's part of the reason that you and I became friends, is just reaching out to people that you admire who have made some sort of change and just having a conversation. It's part of the reason why I want to do this podcast series, just to learn how they approached it, what came up for them, and get the truth behind what this really looks like is a step forward. That is progress. That will help breed some of this clarity. I think, you know, it's try and step back from the macro and step into the micro and just observe the small steps and the progress that you're making, because the rest will unfold just in due time.
It's such a good point that you make, and I think you put it way more eloquently than I did. But, yeah, this whole idea of having to have a plan, like it doesn't serve you when you're trying to make this kind of change. And I think, yeah, it's the trust in yourself, and trust that you, when you start to take the steps, like you say, you know, clarity comes from action. It absolutely 110% does come from doing things, because you're trying and you're learning, and then you're figuring out what you might do differently or what you want to do, or if it worked or it didn't, you know, all those kinds of things. So, yeah, you don't need to have a whole plan. The plan should be not to have a plan.
Yeah, anyway. I agree. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, my friend, for the conversation. And I'm sure there will be people out there that can connect and take something away from this.
Yeah, fantastic. And I'm so happy to help anybody who's on this journey, right? I think, you know, that's the other thing that's really can come of like a podcast like this, is that, you know, there's always people out there that are willing to hold the space and to support you through this change. And if I can help another person make the right change, then that'd be a great thing to be able to share.
Thanks, Ames.
Thanks, Penny. Bye.
Thanks for joining me for today's episode of the Hacking Happy podcast. If there was something that ignited a flame or sparked a thought within you from this conversation, please take a screenshot and share it on your preferred social media platform. Feel free to tag me in Hacking Happy Co or Penny Lacalso. Reviews are so important to reaching my goal of making 10 million beautiful humans just like yourself happier. So if you enjoyed your listen, please take a moment, leave a review and a rating on your preferred podcast listening platform. Until the next episode, remember, happiness looks good on you. Bye for now.